Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. This is Westchester on the Level with your host, Hezzy Eris.
Good morning, everyone. Well, today is December 31st. It's the last day of 2018, and the promise of 2019 beckons not very far away. Unfortunately, it's going to be raining in the afternoon. We haven't had rain on New Year's Eve in decades, but maybe that promises some good. You never can tell. It's going to be a little bit different than we've had before. Well, I see we've got our co-host, none other than John Bailey, on the line. So good morning, John. Welcome.
Happy New Year for White Plains, New York, USA, the old Citizenet reporter with you.
Well, it's such a pleasure to have you on New Year's Eve. It's so exciting. I'm glad 2018 is coming to an end. Only in a few more hours it'll be over, and then the promise of 2019 is around the corner. First of all, I got to commend White Plains, because you guys, I think, are the only ones that have a system for people who are reveling tonight with the New Year's Eve. It was a beer company, I think it's Heineken, that actually spends money to pick people up by taxi to make sure that they get home safely.
Absolutely. I mean, that is one thing about the White Plains government, that they run operations well. They're highly secured.
Yeah.
They have a situation where
I'm just getting my own. No, take your time, relax, no problem. I'll be talking to the public. Oh, you're back? Okay, no problem. Hi.
Back, yes, right.
So you said they run a good ship, and they certainly are able to manage all of this, because I'm sure they're going to be picking up thousands of people.
Yes, and what I had found on looking at some old New Year's Eve stories I had written, that they had only about four DWIs in 4 years coming out of White. Yes, they check you as you depart the various entrances.
Excellent.
And
very,
exits
very
of the
excellent.
They check you in, too. You can't bring in any bags, and it is tightly surveilled by the unobtrusive White Plains Police.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Well, I want to commend you also on the White Plains Citizenet Reporter website. You're the publisher and editor. You really did a gargantuan job, because you actually looked at 2018, and you did a synopsis of the stories that were important in 2018, and you spoke about the Trump effect, the Latimer effect. You talked about the school budget and so much more. What was the Trump effect on White Plains?
The Trump effect is disassociating the people from their local view. In other words, they don't pay as much attention to the city because everybody is going into Trump anxiety, either pro or against. And this is the black magic of the Trump administration. He is always the center of attention, whether from a negative viewpoint or from a positive viewpoint as to how you perceive. And this completely puts past transgressions in the rearview mirror.
And this was
alluded to in a Times op-ed article recently about the press pays too much attention to Trump. And so therefore they miss a few of the things that are the results of his policies.
Do you think that with regard to Westchester County Executive Latimer, that he's having a different effect on the county? Well, he's definitely closer than the president.
Reminded of the glasnost era. In other words, George Latimer has brought a sense of calm, confidence, and self-righteousness to Westchester County that we are on the right track and that we are a thoughtful and in the right place morally government now. This is what he exudes. His public appearances, which he averages about five to seven a week.
Right.
With press conferences and announcements. And right. And that, you know, everybody feel good. It's,
yeah,
it's masterfully orchestrated by his Department of Communications.
So even though that's the image that we get of White Plains, we still have and the county, of course, we still have issues that plague the county, like Playland. We don't know what's going on with there. We're not sure what's going to happen with the airport. We're not sure about FASME. It's going on into 9 years. You mentioned that as well, and we got problems everywhere we look at the same time. So how does George Latimer balance that, or does he?
Oh, well, there is no balance. What he wants you to know, he tells you, and what you should really know about what he's doing, he doesn't tell you.
that's very well put.
Well, it's true. I mean, how can you not have a press conference if you met with Nick Price on Playland saying that we're cooperating, we're seeking a solution? He didn't have it. He met with the guy or his representatives. We still do not know whether Mr. Price was actually at that meeting. You know, he's a Standard Amusements hedge fund mastermind.
Right.
Wants to take over Playland, or at least did at one time. Now, we don't know whether he's still interested and on what terms. Now, it is said that, well, you can't negotiate in public, but you can give an indication of how you're doing it. Okay. Bye.
Mm-hmm.
My daughter popping into the studio there.
That's okay.
But at any rate, This is what is bothersome about it. And the airport, does he or does he not want to throw open the airport for more perhaps requests for proposals and have better deals?
That's going to be very interesting.
I mean, he doesn't say what his policy is. He just sort of, you know, it just meanders along. He has had a year to work on the Playland deal with Mr. Price. A year.
Yeah.
Got to understand now, okay? You know?
You would think, yes. Yes, you
and
would.
They also have to put their cards on the table, and we don't even know what the attendance at Playland was. I've asked that question many times, and it's been ignored by the Department of Communications. Yeah,
because they ignore what they want to ignore. That's not just in this administration, but in every other. I want
absolutely,
to ask you about
but this is what people do not understand. They buy the image and not the facts.
Yes, that's always been the case. And I guess
but John F. Kennedy was the mastermind of that.
Yeah. It's the burden of media, just being able to go beyond the drama and to see the reality. And so that veneer needs to be, shattered.
You used to be able to download the county videos that they make and put out, you know, 2 to 3 a week. I may be exaggerating. You used to be able to download directly and use them on your own news website or whatever. You can't do that anymore. So that's interesting.
It is. I wanted to ask you about something else that's happening. Of course, we elected a new New York State legislature defined by those that are in the Senate and those that are in the Assembly, in the New York State Assembly and the New York State Senate. And there are a lot of hassles. You know, people – like, for example, I saw that one of the people, the top senator from the Democratic conference, I forgot now her name. I just
listening
for a second. Andrea Stewart-Cousins.
Right.
She's from Yonkers.
How quickly you forget when they get up to Albany, right?
Yeah, well, they don't make themselves known.
Invisible.
As far as I'm concerned, but that wasn't the issue. But that's always been her case as far as I'm concerned. I think she talks to Albany more than she does talk to Westchester County. But the big issue with her and with Hastie is that it's suggested that she will not even attend the inauguration that's being held at by the governor. And what I don't understand is, what is it that she resents about him so much? What has he done to hurt her that she thinks she shouldn't be attending the inauguration?
I think if you're going to be working with the governor and Mr. Hastie,
I mean, she's
going to
need him.
Iron out the budget. You have to show up. I'm sorry. You have to do it. I mean, I don't always love the idea of going to press conference, but I try to show up when other commitments permit.
This is going to be at Ellis Island. Doesn't she give a hoot one way or the other? It says something about the demeanor of New York State, which is contra the indications we're getting from the president. A lot of people are resentful of today, but the point is our history is based on immigration. And so it's symbolic, if that's all. But why is she picking a fight with the governor? Is she so
powerful?
What's the point?
Good. Go in with a negative attitude. She's already accused him, I believe, of somewhat ignoring her because of her race.
Yes, she did, because of her race and her being a woman.
Yes. Women cannot act this way. I give you the example of the mistress of media, Kellyanne Conway, who is resolute, intense, nothing phases her, and she just sticks by her guns and drives at the facts. You can't negotiate through a position of weakness. Oh, you are doing this to me. You can't negotiate that way because it's negative. It shows that you are weak.
But you know what's interesting? You bring up a good point. Kellyanne Conway is really quite brilliant. And what's fascinating is that here in this particular case with Andrea Stewart-Cousins not attending Ellis Island inauguration with the governor, it really stinks. And you know why it stinks?
Conway never ducked
the
press darkest hours of the Trump campaign. Never ducked.
Let's move on. The real issue is that she's not fighting for the people. She's fighting for her own money. She wants the $110,000 that she's going to get next year in 2019, and it's going to go up to, I think, $140,000. That's all she wants. She's ready to shut the place because she wants her money, and she wants the money for the other senators, and Hastie wants the money for his assembly people. What the hell did these people go up to office for?
All about them.
What are they doing for us lately? Because I haven't seen
it's
anything.
All about
yet.
Them. It's always been all about them.
I am outraged.
Yeah. It really has.
Well, you know,
this business of the holding the pay hostage by the governor, he knows where they come from, say.
Well, evidently he does.
Yes.
I thought maybe he was a little bit unreasonable, but he's not unreasonable. Why do they fight him? Because they want to be able to earn more money on the side.
I think it's absurd giving them that much of a raise. I really do. Simply because they know full well what the pay for the job was when they took it.
I agree. They were supposed to get
$79,500. I don't think they're working any harder. They couldn't get
They're not working harder. They've been in office, some of them before. Some will be sworn in on the first, not a problem. But the ones that are in the job. If they didn't like 79.5, then you know what? Who's asking you to run? What have you done?
Yes, go back
for
to your law
lately?
Practice where you might have to work.
Go back. Exactly. And you know what's interesting? They weren't given the raise. They took their raise. They made their own raise. They're
that,
the ones that voted.
They were not
raise.
Given it. They proposed it because then they applied inflation to it. Basically, it is an absolute. They are not going to stop doing what they've been doing, trading their influence.
Well, that's all they're doing, and I don't know why we're voting these
they
suckers
will not.
In, because you know what? They have. You know what? I don't know about what? You, John, but there
what?
Are many people who earn way over 79.5. But
of
you know
course
what?
They do.
Most of the people in this state are not earning 79,500. And you know they also get a stipend every day that they're up there. They get money for food, they get money for housing, they get
free
money
lunch.
For their car, they get gas for their car, they still make the 79,500 and what more do they want? What
yes,
more do they
making
want?
Making well over 100
starving
to
on the street.
So do all the extra perks.
It only makes it even worse. There are people who don't even earn half of what they make in this country, in this state. And so what are they doing up there? And you know what? Hasty's all bent out of shape because he wants to make his $20,000 on the side. You know, why doesn't he say, you know what? I'll give the $500 you plan to give me. Don't even give it to me. You keep it for the New York State coffers, and this way I'll be legally at 19.5.
Yes.
There's supposed to be a senator that earns $500,000 from his law firm. He's even contemplating to step down. You know why? Because he doesn't need the job. He doesn't need the money. He needs the influence. We'll see if he keeps the job or if he throws away the $500,000 he makes.
Yeah.
I tell you, what a hellhole this place is.
It is. I mean, on the Albany Senate and Assembly just kowtows. They kowtows to whoever influences them the most. How they influence them is a matter of conjecture.
Well, I don't know if it was any better with the Republicans.
No.
I certainly was. I don't think it was that much better or even worse. I think they both stink. Because at the end of the day, they don't do the work of the public interest. And then why are they going, why are they standing up there before us? Running for what? Who are they running for? They're running for themselves? I thought this was a country where we represented the public interest.
Yes. What is most interesting today is the business regarding the Con Ed, NYSEG failure to... reconnect the county last spring. If you recall, virtually every legislator and leader in Westchester County absolutely was unprecedented in their criticism of the Con Ed and NYSEG's performance. Were well over, I think it was 100,000 people were out of power at one time.
Yep.
And it also took them like 10 days to reconnect most people. And well, this was a scandal, and they've George Lederer even said that the head of Con Ed should resign, and had in a phone call, and televised phone call. And what was intriguing to me is that since June, we have not heard a peep from all these these legislators and leaders and city mayors and the county on what to do with Con Ed. And we have not heard from the PSC on what they're going to do to fine Con Ed, if they even decide to do so, or NYSEG. It has disappeared, this outrage.
Well, you know, what's fascinating about all of this is, again, the voter is unaware, because not every media outlet such as yours, the Y Plains Citizenette Reporter, they don't always report these issues. They don't always remember what happened 6 months ago and repeat it until it gets resolved. And the public hears nice words from whoever these people are who stand before us as our elected officials. We elected them, but they're not doing anything for us. Why don't they take Con Ed and burn them over the coals? You know,
The Public Service Commission is a disgrace. The Public Service Commission is the most misnamed commission in the country.
Correct.
Because they do not serve the public, they serve the utilities.
Well, then I got to ask you then, if this is what's going on across the country, not just here in the state of New York, why do people suffer this? When is it going to become a nation of the people, by the people, for the people? Or why don't we just trash our Constitution and say the hell with it?
Well, there's a big effort to do that right now.
Well,
and we just have to be more vigilant about it. But I was thinking, trying to write a column this morning, and I want to think, we think this is really a bleak time for our democracy, and it is not good, and bad things are happening, and bad thoughts are happening. But there were other dark years in American history. 1941 comes to mind, when we were going into a war that we did not know that we could prevail, and we were committing lots of our boys and men and women to the war effort. That was a really bad year. And we also like to think of 1968 and 67, where we had race riots across the country, where the Democratic Convention had the Chicago police beat demonstrators, and this was a really bleak year. And then there was the Nixon administration. We went through Watergate, and we've got a real taste of how expedient President Nixon was. And then those were dark years of the past. Then we worried. However, the bleak thing about right now is that we have a leader who has done a lot of really very un-American type things and has promulgated race prejudice and has attacked immigrants, and now the government has been shut down, and he has done this with an uncanny ability to maneuver the opposition into being the enemy.
That's his skill, you know. But you know what? I'm sick and tired of waiting for everyone to blame Trump. He's certainly at fault.
He doesn't know. You can't blame him. It's a strategy.
He's 100% at fault. But you know what?
Yes.
I fault an equal 100% in the feet of the Democrats who haven't said squat about anything, who haven't done anything. Just because they were out of power doesn't mean they couldn't have been critical in a positive way. They were not. They were silent. And you know what? Let's see if these bozos, when they get into office, we'll see if they change anything in the equation. I want to see that done. Because I'm sick and tired of just the talk. I'm looking for action, and I'm looking for something that would work, not just for Democrats or just for Republicans. It's time we start working on this nation dividing us as we divide ourselves all the time. And, you know,
yes,
I'm thrilled that, of course,
that
we
way.
Got through
it's
World
pop-
War One and all that, but when are we going to stop going through these cycles of disparity? I don't get it. I'm really ticked off. I've had it. I just don't understand why we tolerate this stuff. I know you don't. You report it all the time.
Yeah,
but what's wrong with our electorate? How come they don't get it?
It's hard to do it. It's hard to report it. And it takes courage. And I'm not patting myself on the back. But
you deserve praise for what you're doing. You know what? You know, there's so much in media today that is get along to get along for the sake of getting along.
It certainly is. And it's fascinating how the New York Times is now putting in op-eds that somewhat explain away the Trump mystique. which legitimizes it.
Yep.
When you put in what I like to call a balanced view, you are legitimizing something.
Well, that's the thing that I find very interesting, for example, because quite often, because I always thought that the only way to give a perspective is to give both sides of the equation or three sides to the equation. The bottom line is there is truth. There is honesty. There's integrity in reporting. There's also BS. There's also the make-believe, the facts that are not true, the facts that are wrong.
Reporting
the
facts
faking,
that are not
the
true
crockery.
Is terrible.
Well, so why do we give it, why do we give it equal time?
Yeah.
That's how we created Fox News.
Yes,
you know,
that
this,
is exactly.
This make-believe world.
Yes.
I don't understand where that comes from.
And there was an intriguing article I read about, it was a quote. Someone said that one generation fights and really sacrifices for liberty, and then the children of that generation give it away again.
Squander it. Mm-hmm.
And
this is what has
happened
for us
with
to break
our
the cycle.
Generation. We have become comfortable and self-centered, and we have not paid attention to the sacrifice that freedom costs.
Well, you know, the thing is, though, we were learning what our elders did.
Yes,
and how
we were.
They sacrificed, and it seems that we're not doing that anymore. So we're not celebrating the accomplishments of the past. Not that everything needed to be celebrated. There was many derogatory things that could be said about the past. But we didn't celebrate the positive, and we either maybe we didn't even know about the negative. Maybe that's the problem. We know too little.
Maybe
and
it is.
We can't make a decision.
Or maybe it's seeing too much of the other side's position.
Uh-huh. Maybe that's could be very,
too.
Very true.
But,
unbelievable. Well, John, we've really wrapped up 2018 in a nutshell.
Oh, that's true. And I hope that there will be a different mindset on the part of the Democratic Party very quickly, because they will lose the 2020 election if they don't find a mission and a message.
Yeah, we need to have a message.
They don't have one right
somebody,
now.
No, they
Trump,
don't.
Trump is
I don't know
touting
if,
the greatest economy in what,
entered,
years? I mean, it's tough to beat a lie like that.
It's true. I hear that Pocahontas entered her name as a potential presidential candidate. So she's going to be running, and we'll see how that goes. It's interesting, Michelle Obama is one of the most well-respected women in the nation, and I don't know if she's running or not. And so it's going to be very interesting if there's going to be a change in the demeanor here.
Well,
Hillary's, she's fading away.
Michelle Obama, with all great respect, I say this, she is obviously the most intriguing possible candidate, but can another black person win in this climate?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
I don't know.
It's a real litmus test for America. But, of course, when Obama won, he was going against one of the most incompetent presidents we've ever had. And that was George.
Well, that's what I think. So I don't know. I don't think it's because she's black. She's a very well-educated woman. I think it's because we're looking for someone different. Who knows?
Biden
maybe the
will
next
not
person
win.
Will be Hispanic, for all we know.
Biden will not win. He's too old. The younger Democrats are not as well-known nationally. And the Democrats have a big problem. They have no one yet.
Well, that's true, too. Well, listen,
nobody.
John, I want to wish you a happy new year, 2019, in good health, and hopefully the subjects will be different next year and not the same as this. So all the best to you, sir.
And all the best to you,
Hezzy.
It's always a pleasure coming on the air with you on Mondays.
Thank you. Be well.
It starts my week, too. Right. I say things.
All right. Excellent.
Can't say.
Be good.
Okay.
Bye.
So long, everybody, and have a very
good day. Let's just see if we can pull in. There we go. Michael Edelman, good morning. Thank you for waiting.
Good morning. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. I'm glad that we're celebrating the New Year on the last day of December, December 31st. There is always the potential of something a lot better come 2019, except we're going through troubled moments. You know, maybe we can eclipse that in less than 24 hours. So
that's not
what's
gonna happen.
Going on? It seems like the president has really messed it up quite a bit, hasn't he? Looks like in the Middle East, he said he's pulling out.
Yep.
Today I hear that he's not going to pull out so quickly. There's a vacuum already. Is the president on the right track doing what he's doing, or has he lost all concepts of what is important for America? But is he forcing other countries like Germany to get involved and the French to get involved to pick up the vacuum? Is this going to be good?
No, because the president doesn't have a sense of where the United States belongs in terms of its role in the world post-World War II. We've managed to develop alliances across the globe that have worked to our benefit. We recognize who our enemies are and who our friends are not. We have supported freedom and democracy and encouraged people to exercise, you know, their human rights. He has abandoned all of that for a transactional presidency, which is interested in selling weapons to Saudi Arabia and conducting trade wars with China and doing everything that is actually historically against the interests of the United States. He is an anti-Democrat, and I don't mean Democratic Party. He's an anti-small D Democrat. He's an authoritarian wannabe. He's had Mattis and McMaster and Kelly and Tillerson all left. The only stability he had going for him was that he was surrounded by people who, at least you knew, had judgment, and he got rid of them one way or the other. They either left calling him a moron, an effing moron, as a matter of fact, or they resigned and sent letters letting the United States public know how dangerous this guy really is. So what we're going to have starting Wednesday morning is a new Congress, which is Democrat, where the House chairman, the chairman of the Intelligence Committee, is a Democrat. The chairman of the Judiciary Committee is a Democrat. The chairman of the all committees will be Financial Committee, Banking. Is it? They're all going to be Democrats. They all have subpoena power. Okay, and this is something that is going to be very bad in a bigly fashion for Donald Trump.
So he's going to be under assault. It's going to probably freak him out. I mean, he seems to have a very thin skin as it is anyway. So he's going to be tweeting all his outrage.
I think he's already freaked out. I think he's already freaked out.
I agree. So he's got a very thin skin on top of that. So he'll be tweeting his outrage every day, who knows how often. Has the president's, demeanor in the Middle East by pulling out, who knows if he's really staying in or not. He changes his mind every day within hours. I don't understand that. Is that going to embolden other powers in the Middle East to have their own way? Is it going to create even greater antagonisms in the Middle East, between Egypt and and Yemen and Saudis and the Iranians and the Iraqis and everybody is in an uproar.
Well, what he's done is he's signaled that he's erratic. And when somebody is unpredictable and erratic, your enemies can take advantage of your failure to provide a stable course for U.S. foreign policy. Now, the recent announcement that he was going to withdraw 2,000 training troops from northern Syria who weren't really fighting, but what we were doing was training the Kurds to fight and to defeat ISIS,
correct,
which territorially we pretty much did. But a group like that, which is an idea rather than a still has about 30,000 adherents in the area, and U.S. forces are needed to shore up the Kurds who were fighting them. So when he announces without any discussion with his own staff or with his generals or with his allies or with anybody who's got any knowledge of the area that he's going to pull out, and then Lindsey Graham has lunch with him and says, well, he's not pulling out that quickly, this is totally confusing to everybody. So what he's doing is allowing Iran, Russia, Assad, and Hezbollah, okay, take advantage of the situation. Because, you know, he says he's pulling out one day, and the next day, well, maybe not so much. How can you be president and do that?
I have no idea. I've never been president, but it just doesn't seem to sit right. You know, I guess the whole thing now, it seems, well, I read this someplace that is holding off coming up with his peace plan in the Middle East, particularly between the Palestinians and the Israelis. And even though he moved the embassy, the American embassy, to Jerusalem, he says that now what he's holding back on is that parts of Jerusalem or West Jerusalem is going to be the capital of the Palestinians, and the rest would be in Israeli hands. Is that doable, or is that just as a signal for war?
Well, first of all, Jared Kushner is not the guy to make peace between the Israelis and the Palestinians. Okay, Jared Kushner has an Ambassador Friedman, who's a nut job, is not the guy to send as ambassador to that part of the world. I doubt very seriously that the Palestinians are going to sit down and agree to anything, considering what Netanyahu's policy has been regarding the settlements and regarding obliterating the contiguity of the Palestinian areas. So what they're trying to do is they're trying to insinuate settlements in various geopolitical positions, so that whatever is designated as a homeland for Palestine, for Palestinians, isn't connected with each other. So it would be a block of grand land here and a glob of land there. That's not a contiguous state, and the Palestinians aren't going to agree to that, and they're not. And so there's not going to be peace in the immediate future. There just isn't.
I remember when the State of Israel was put together, it was also not contiguous. That was what it was agreed upon, and because of the war, it became contiguous. And now you got Gaza on the one hand, the West Bank on the other. That's not contiguous either. Why does the world agree to these situations when they know it's not going to work? I mean, we still
don't
even
see
have
the
that
world
problem
agreeing.
Between. Well, I think they did when they started this whole situation, didn't they? They may
what
not
situation?
Agree today.
I'm talking about today. They created a State of Israel, but there were borders in 1967 that no longer exist. Now, if you went back to 1967,
correct,
and you told the government in Israel, all right, these borders are going to be safe and secure. The United Nations is going to guard these borders. You will not be attacked by any nation next to you. They would have said fine. That would have been a deal. Okay? Then what's his name? That would have been a deal. Then Ariel Sharon, as tough as he was, entered in negotiations with I don't think Arafat was there at the time, but the next guy that was, he was going to trade land for peace. He was going to give back whole swaths of settlements in return for peace. So that would have been a deal,
correct,
except he had a stroke. He had a stroke.
Yes.
So that was the end of that deal. All right, now you got a situation where the Palestinians aren't going to make a deal. They're just not going to make a deal because now they got nothing to make a deal over.
Well, so that's part of being emboldened to some extent, you know, feeling the vacuum. But at the end, I guess it'll be just a stalemate and we'll go on to whatever the next crisis will come about. Is that how you think it's going to work out?
I don't think Jared Kushner's peace plan is going to work, whatever his peace plan is, because it's going to be lopsided. It's going to be a lopsided plan.
Yeah.
There's plenty of ways to work out an agreement that isn't lopsided, but there are a lot of Israelis that want a lopsided. As a matter of fact, in Israel now, they're talking about a one-state solution, not a two-state solution. So once you start doing that, how are you going to have a peace plan?
I don't know. I don't know at the moment. I don't have the brains for it, to be honest with you. I don't know which way it's going to go.
Maybe in 2019, your brain tissue will expand.
Oh, you never can tell. But I think as we get older, it may just not work. I'm not quite sure. So I hope for the best. So what are the prospects now? Is America doing well when the Chinese lost over $2 trillion worth of land values in their country because of the tariffs? Is that a winning game plan for America, or is that going to be a losing plan?
Well, I think the problem is that when there aren't any barriers to trade, goods are cheaper for those who want to buy it. Economies grow. So in this particular situation, Donald Trump decided unilaterally to impose tariffs on China, and we haven't sold any soybeans to them in the fourth quarter. Farmers in the United States are taking a huge beating, and I don't believe they've received any of the so-called bailout money. Republicans are supposed to be fiscally responsible. We got a $1.3 trillion deficit because of the stupid tax cuts, which is less popular now than Obamacare, which was unpopular when it started, that when people realized that they could keep their 26-year-olds on the policy and that it would cover pre-existing conditions, they decided it was a good idea. So all of this nonsense that's being fed to people about Obamacare being a bad idea is actually what has propelled the Democrats into control of the House of Representatives. And I wouldn't be a bit surprised that there is a bill that is proposed that doesn't provide Medicare for all because that's too expensive. However, as I've said on your program a long time ago, Medicare for 55 and over is doable if you allow people to buy into it at a lot cheaper than it costs to go on Obamacare. And then you take the sick or older people out of the pool, those people from 55 to 65, and those are the years where people tend to get ill if they have genetic problems. They get diabetes, they get heart, they get cancer. You take those people out of the pool and you leave the 55 under in the pool, then the premiums for the buying insurance go down on the exchanges.
Yeah.
And everybody wins. And everybody wins because Medicare is a successful health insurance plan that provides care to seniors. You have to pay for it, but it's nowhere near the cost of a private insurance company. So, I have no doubt that plan will be proposed and it will pass in the House, and then the Senate will have to figure out what they want to do about it. But health care was the driving force in the midterm elections. It's why, along with immigration, it's why Trump got smacked down. And if he stays with his plan to build a wall And he doesn't understand, and he doesn't seem to understand, frankly, that a wall is not what we need. As John Kelly pointed out in his exit interview with Los Angeles Times, he said they recognized a long time ago that a wall wasn't what they want to build. It was going to be a series of slats and fences and technology combined to make the border secure, which nobody opposes, but nobody wants to build a wall. So Donald Trump, however, is harping on the wall because that was the focal point of his rallies. I'm going to build a great, big, beautiful, high wall that nobody can climb over, and that's not going to happen.
So we're going to be stuck with a wall that'll actually define the rest of the 2 years left over with this president. I understand some Democrats are throwing their hats into the ring, for president. Are we getting people that are unique to the system, or should we be looking at the old guard to take us forward? But have the Democrats come up with a plan yet?
The Democrats, you can't. First of all, in the Democratic primary, you're going to have a lot of people running, and they're going to have to figure out a way to configure debates so it's not a mess. You don't have 20 people on the stage because that's not a debate. They're going to have to configure a way. They've obviously changed the way the superdelegates have to do with the selection process because that gives too much power to too few people and not enough power to the rank and file. But you're going to have a fight. And because everybody knows Donald Trump can be beaten. So Cory Booker and Elizabeth Warren and Joe Biden and Sherrod Brown and Kamala Harris and 15 other people are all going to form committees, and we'll see what happens. I mean, look what the Republicans did. They had 15 people, and none of those 15 people won. Donald Trump won the nomination because he was totally unusual. There were people that said, you know what, he's different, let's take a chance. How much damage could he possibly do? It can't get worse than Obama and blah, blah, blah. And now they see how much worse it is.
Right. That's very true. So what are the prospects for America over the next 2 years? Can we tell that based on where we've come? Because it does seem, you used a phenomenally good word, erratic. The president is erratic, and I don't know where anything stands. Why did he also fly into the Middle East in the middle of the night? What was the purpose of that, or is just that a press?
Well, no, he was going to. I mean, the intention of the trip was a good intention. He turned it into a political rally, which presidents never do when they're addressing the troops. They are supposed to let the troops know that the president is behind them, that the people at home are behind them, that we appreciate their service and blah, blah, blah. You don't start talking about the Democrats and the wall when you're in front of the troops in Iraq. So, this president doesn't understand what being president is. He doesn't understand how to bring the country together, doesn't want to bring the country together. He just wants to pander to the dwindling number of his base, and that base is going down every day. Okay, it's at 40%, it's at 38%. When it gets down to about 32%, you're going to see Republicans in the United States Senate turn on this president, and they'll either impeach him or they'll ask him to resign, or he'll decide to resign because he knows he can't win.
I wanted to ask you, when we look more locally in New York State, we have Andrea Stewart-Cousins. She's now the senior member of the Majority Conference, which is the Democrats in the New York State Senate. Yeah. Hasty is the leader of the Assembly, the New York State Assembly. The governor is going to be holding an inaugural speech at Ellis Island today. Uh-huh. And they supposedly are not going to – well, Andrea Stewart-Cousins says she's not going to be able to attend. And Hasty is unsure. And they're both fighting, Hasty and Andrea, they're both fighting the governor because they don't like the rules where they can't earn more than $19,500 beyond what they get paid. And they just decided to vote themselves a pay increase as it is. They're going to be making $110,000 as of tomorrow per year. And they get stipends and they get a car and they get reduced cost in gasoline and they get a food allowance. Are they mostly concerned about what they can earn rather than serving the public interest, or is that the problem because the public isn't involved as much?
Well,
they don't know what's going on.
New York has always had a problem with part-time legislative pay because they only serve part of the year. And what happens is the rest of the time, a lot of them are lawyers, and they get into situations where they're partially representing people that have business with the state, and they got to watch themselves regarding conflicts. I've always thought that they ought to give them a decent salary and preclude them from doing anything else. So pay them $170,000 a year, but they can't have any outside income unless it's from investments. That's what I would do. I don't believe that people that are members of the legislature should practice law or practice something else, or real estate or whatever it is, because they can only do one thing well at a time. Most people can't even do that one thing well. But when you have to juggle your personal – if you're a lawyer and you're up in Albany, you're not going to be able to represent your clients all that well. And if your partner is representing people that are your clients and they have business with the state, you get into all kinds of conflicts of interest. So I would just stop it altogether. You want to be a public servant? Good. You get a decent salary like a judge gets. Judge gets $150,000, $160,000, but that's it. Now, if you don't think you can live on $150,000, then that's not for you.
Exactly. Well, why do people run for a job where they're only permitted $79,500, which is what it was this year? Why did they run for that if they didn't think they could afford it? I mean, there are a lot of people who don't even earn $79,500 or even half of that. Why do they go for the job?
Well, first of all, $80,000 a year in upstate New York is a pretty good salary.
It is.
Now, it's not a good salary if you live in Manhattan, but if you live in Plattsburgh,
no, it's not.
$80,000, you're wealthy. If you live in Buffalo, or if you live in Boulogne, or if you live in Rochester, Syracuse, you can live just fine on $80,000 a year. Okay?
Absolutely.
And then if you so many of these legislators use this to supplement their other income. They're lawyers. They're realtors. I don't know what else they are, but they do a lot of stuff. This is a supplement. It shouldn't be a state legislative position. Should be your job. You do that all year round. So when you're not in Albany, you got an office in the area. You help your constituents with their problems. That's your job, and you should get 100 and whatever for it, 130, 140. I don't care what it is. The state's not going to go broke paying it, but then you can't make any other money.
Correct. Well, that's the problem. It looks like they're mostly concerned about making money on the side. I hear there are some people earning so much money on the side that they're actually thinking of leaving because they can't afford to let go. And I think that's great.
Yeah.
Who needs
them
at that point? Let them earn their living somewhere else.
Yep.
Well, I like your idea of $170,000, whatever the figure is, a year, and that's it. And that's the entire – that's what they get. And
that's it.
And they could do the good job that way, and they're full-timers.
Yep.
Then they might be able to focus on the job.
Well,
brilliant.
They might. They would absolutely focus on the job.
They got nothing else to focus on. So what are the prospects for America? How do you see America moving forward in the next year? Or is that too – with Trump, one never knows exactly where one will be and from one minute to the next. Are we just –
let me just say this.
At the moment?
Yeah, let me say this. We are waiting for two things to happen. We are waiting for the Democrats to take over in the Congress. We are waiting for a number of investigations. That's part of their oversight function that the Republican Congress did not do because they were shilling for Donald Trump, just like Sean Hannity was shilling. Did you ever think that Fox News, with all the billions that it makes, would allow two of its evening hosts, Pirro and Hannity, to actually appear at a convention on behalf of a candidate? And isn't that an illegal financial corporate contribution? Isn't that a contribution from Fox directly to Trump? Yeah. And shouldn't it be filed? Well, nobody's brought that up, okay? It probably also violates the FEC rules about having licenses and whether networks can actively participate in political campaigns. Okay, so there's two things that have never been looked at. I just wanted to mention those. But I think what's going to happen is, so the first thing is the Democrats taking over the Congress and all those investigations. And the second thing is Bob Mueller. The Mueller investigation will demonstrate, I believe, conclusively that people working with and for Donald Trump conspired with Russia and WikiLeaks to meddle and fix the election in his favor. There is no doubt in my mind from what I've read and what I've gleaned and what I sense in my gut that there's no way, okay, that the 185 million Facebook posts and the 20 million Twitter tweets that were placed by Russians had to have influenced less than 1% of the vote in Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania. Okay, so that 185 million translated into 38,000 votes for Trump that would have gone to Hillary Clinton. There's no doubt in my mind.
Well, now it turns out, I read today that the fixer, you know, Mr. Cohen, who was President Trump's personal attorney, he supposedly did go in 2016 to Prague and supposedly worked out some sort of a deal there.
They don't know. Well, he's got to tell Robert Mueller whether he did or he didn't.
Right.
But what they're going off of is his cell phone pinged off towers that are near Prague, and he has I believe his in-laws live in Prague. And Ivana his second wife, Ivana, is from Prague. So it might have been Don Jr. visiting his mother who took, don't forget, Michael Cohen had 20 or 30 cell phones. It's very possible it wasn't Michael Cohen. It was Don Jr. visiting his mother and also talking to Russians. We'll find out. We will find out. But it's not going to be good for President and his family. They will all be charged.
Huh. Yeah. Well, you've been saying that for years. So, you know, it's. I feel in my gut, you know, that it's going to happen, and we're going to be in a state of chaos. Or do you think that we'll be able to deal with this particular crisis better than we dealt with the issue with President Nixon years ago?
Well, we dealt with that fine. You know, he was impeached. He resigned. He wasn't impeached. They were going to impeach him. And he didn't have the votes in the Senate, and he resigned, and the world went on. The United States went on. Gerald Ford became president. He pardoned him, and Gerald Ford was beaten by Jimmy Carter in the next general election. Bill Clinton was impeached, and the world went on. He wasn't convicted. They didn't have the votes. It was stupid to try. This is much more serious. Neither one of those people conspired with Russia to fix an election. Okay, the Watergate break-in was a stupid break-in that was domestic political stuff, and Bill Clinton was having sex in the Oval Office. This is not that. This is a conspiracy to undermine the Republic. That's a totally different ball game.
Yeah, this is really the worst possible situation. This is treason. Wow.
That's exactly what it is.
Mr. Edelman, as usual, you've not only started the week off on a phenomenal note, but you've also closed the year, and it's tightly wrapped, and we'll see if it blows up or if we can just move on in a much better way.
Yep.
So all the best to
okay.
you and your family
you
and
too.
Your
Have
friends
a great
and
new
associates.
Year.
Thank
you.
And thank you for sharing your thoughts with us. All the best, sir.
You're welcome. See you next year.
Thank you. Be well. Well, there we have it, folks. Michael Edelman, Esquire, political analyst, just superb. I don't know if anybody else is around that like him is so balanced and can give you a perspective from both sides and yet at the same time come to a conclusion which is rational and fact-based. So that's a very difficult situation and perspective that we rarely have in today's world. So that's really cool. I'm going to go back to our studio screen in a moment. One second here. Let's see if I can get that up. And okay, looks like we're going to be there. Okay, so perfect. It looks like we're on target. Let's find out what's going on in our neck of the woods. And then we'll be right back. Right now, we've got what's going on in the Yonkers Tribune, and then we will be back.
The Yonkers Tribune, named Home of the Acid-Tongued Bloggers by the New York Times, is a multifaceted news organization dedicated to keeping the citizens of Yonkers and Westchester informed via the internet and radio. Hezzy Aris is the tireless publisher, editor, and radio host of the Yonkers Tribune. He is a balding, bearded gnome, equipped with a digital camera and a steno pad at all times. Hezzy is frequently spotted in local meetings, translating the events into a Baroque prose style with an infusion of well-mannered outrage. The Yonkers Tribune attracts an informed, well-educated, affluent audience who hungers to know more about politics in all its permutations and nuances. Politics, says Hezzy, is our forte. Advertising inquiries are always welcome. Please call Hezzy Aris at 914-562-0834 or send an email to ehezi@hush.com.
Welcome back. This is Westchester on the Level. And if you want to reach the Yonkers Tribune, the best number to reach them at now is 347-415-4326. So 347-415-4326. That's a cell number. That's the office number. It's the tech. NASA is going to usher in the new year with a flyby video of the farthest cosmic body that it can see. So a NASA spaceship is zooming toward the farthest and quite possibly the oldest cosmic body ever photographed by humankind, a tiny distant world called Ultima. Ultima Thule, T-H-U-L-E. Some 4 billion miles away. So the U.S. Space Agency will ring in the new year with a live online broadcast to mark historic flyby of the mysterious object in a dark and frigid region of space known as the Kuiper Belt, K-U-I-P-E-R Belt, at about 12:33 in the morning of January 1, so that local time. So 33 minutes after midnight as of tomorrow. So a guitar anthem recorded by legendary Queen guitarist Brian May, who also holds an advanced degree in astrophysics, will be released just after midnight to accompany a video simulation of the flyby as NASA commentators describe the close pass on, get this, write this down, www.nasa.gov/NASA Live. So www.nasa.gov/NASA Live. Real-time video of the actual flyby is impossible since it takes more than 6 hours for a signal sent from Earth to reach the spaceship named New Horizons, and another 6 hours for the response to arrive. So, but if all goes well, the first images should be in hand by the end of New Year's Day. And judging by the latest tweet from Alan Stern, the lead scientist on the New Horizons mission, the excitement among team members is palpable. It's happening. Flyby is upon us at New Horizon 2015 is healthy and on course. the farthest exploration of worlds in history, he wrote on Saturday. And what does it look like? Scientists are not sure what ultimate tool, I didn't know if it was pronounced tool or Thule. It's Ultima Thule, it's a European name, whether it is round or oblong, or even if it is a single object or a cluster. It was discovered in 2014 with the help of the Hubble Space Telescope. It's believed to be 12 to 20 miles in size. Scientists decided to study it with New Horizons after the spaceship, which launched in 2006, completed its main mission of flying by Pluto in 2015, returning the most detailed images ever taken of the dwarf planet. So at closest approach, we're going to try to image Ultima at three times the resolution we had for Pluto, said Stern. If we can accomplish that, it will be spectacular. Hurtling through space at speeds of 32,000 miles an hour, the spacecraft aims to make its closest approach within 2,200 miles of the surface of Ultima Thule. The flyby will be fast at a speed of 9 miles per second. Seven instruments on board will record high-resolution images and gather data about its size and composition. Ultima Thule is named for a mythical far northern island in medieval literature and cartography, according to NASA. Ultima Thule means beyond Thule, beyond the borders of the known world, symbolizing the exploration of the distant Kuiper Belt and Kuiper Belt objects that New Horizons is performing, something never before done, the U.S. Space Agency said in a statement. So according to project scientist Hal Weaver of the Johns Hopkins Applied Physics Laboratory, mankind didn't even know the Kuiper Belt, a vast ring of relics from the formation days of the solar system, existed until the 1990s. This is the frontier of planetary science, said Weaver. We finally have reached the outskirts of the solar system. These things that have been there since the beginning and have hardly changed, we think we will find out. Despite the partial U.S. government shutdown, sparked by a feud over funding for a border wall with Mexico between President Donald Trump and opposition Democrats, NASA Administrator Jim Bridenstine vowed that the U.S. Space Agency would broadcast the flyby. Normally, NASA TV and NASA's website would go dark during a government shutdown. NASA will provide updates from another spacecraft called OSIRIS-REx that will enter orbit around the asteroid Bennu, B-E-N-N-U, on New Year's Day, Bridenstine said. Wow, is that unbelievable or what? So very interesting. Now there's more stuff that's coming out. Evidently, a U.S. senator suggests that Trump will slow down the Syria troop withdrawal. So let's hear what is going on here. Bear with me a moment, and we'll try to pick this up. 1 second.
Lindsey Graham's strategy lunch with U.S. President Donald Trump prompted another change of heart. The withdrawal from Syria is not the disaster Graham first feared.
I've done every combination of immigration. I like what I heard. We still have some differences, but I will tell you that President is thinking long and hard about Syria, how to withdraw our forces, but at the same time achieve our national security interests, which are to make sure that ISIS is destroyed, they never come back, that our allies, the Kurds, are protected.
The announcement that the United States will be withdrawing its 2,000 troops from Syria was met with surprise amongst its allies. Defense Secretary Jim Mattis and Brett McGurk, the special envoy for the Global Coalition to Defeat Islamic State, resigned in the wake of the news. Graham had initially called an immediate withdrawal an Obama-like mistake that would endanger national security because it would allow the Islamic State group to rebuild. Graham also feared it would be a betrayal of the U.S.-backed Kurdish fighters of the YPG militia, who would be left vulnerable to neighboring Turkey. But after his meeting, Lindsey Graham indicated that Trump will be managing a smart and slowed-down pullout. To help protect the Kurds, U.S. military commanders are recommending that the Kurdish fighters be allowed to keep their U.S.-supplied weapons.
Well, that's the story there, which is really interesting. Bear with me one second. I want to go over and look at some other issues, of course. One second. This is important as well. Evidently, the government shutdown is going to continue amid the impasse on the funding of the border wall. So listen to what the president had to say. Bear with me a moment.
Okay. Turning data.
One second. We're going to a minute.
Negotiations to halt a partial government shutdown in the United States were over before they even began on Thursday. Both houses of Congress convened for just a few minutes before adjourning until next week. Democrat Jim McGovern said he was taken aback by the hostility in the House of Representatives.
I was trying to reopen the government. I was trying to, get recognition for unanimous consent request to bring a resolution to the floor. You know, I thought that was a reasonable request. I wasn't even given the courtesy of being recognized on the House floor.
It's the seventh day of the third shutdown of the year, and roughly 20% of the government is no longer being funded. This shutdown was triggered by U.S. President Donald Trump's insistence that $5 billion of funding for his border wall with Mexico be included in a spending bill. But the only wall that was present was the mile-high wall between Democrats and Republicans.
Obviously, the president and his team have made a number of reasonable proposals to our Democrat colleagues, and yet what it has been met with is really a wall of sorts, a wall of non-negotiable Democrats.
Democrats are united in their opposition of the border wall, but have previously offered to consider a $1.3 billion border security package. The delicate balance of power in the U.S. Congress is set to flip in 2019. The Democrats take over the House of Representatives, and the Republicans widen their majority in the Senate. Trump's Republican Party currently controls both chambers, and his budget, with a provision for the border wall, passed in the House last week with 217 votes. But the Republican majority in the Senate was unable to rally enough support for the wall. Come January 3rd, House Democrats will be under pressure to get funds flowing. New House Speaker Nancy Pelosi promised a swift vote to reopen the government.
Okay, well, that's part of what's going on there. We'll just check on some more things, which is interesting. And evidently, there was a transformer blast that lit up New York, or the New York skyline, and also caused Twitter to light up as well. Bear with me a moment here. Wanted to check. Okay. Well, a transformer explosion at an electric power substation in the New York City borough of Queens lit it up the night sky with a bright blue light on Thursday, mystifying some residents. But officials said no one was injured in the incident. There was a boom and a bang and a flash of light, said Jim Long, a spokesman for Fire Department of New York, and it's all under control, but we're still getting calls from residents wondering what happened, he said early on Friday. The blue flashes that briefly lit up the night sky in the Astoria area of Queens, New York, shortly after 9 p.m., were caused by a power surge and electrical arcing, and sparked a transformer explosion and a small fire, said Con Edison spokesman Bob McGee. There were no injuries, he said. Social media lit up with videos and photos of the bright light in the night sky over New York City. The chatter continued into Friday morning. And why is the sky lit up bright blue in Queens, New York City right now? Is it fireworks? Louis Santoro, a New York City resident, wrote on Twitter. And one resident, Joe Calderon, told the New York Post, "Damn, I thought a UFO hit Con Ed." Well, so there it goes. So Con Ed, Edison's McGee, reassured residents after the internet speculation that aliens or the villain Thanos from the recent Avengers movie Infinity War had invaded. No, it wasn't space aliens, he said. All but the videos outline or the videos online of the blue lights in the sky are still flying all over the internet, McGee said. Fire caused scattered outages, stalled some city trains, and briefly blacked out LaGuardia Airport, which is operated and located out of Queens because of a transmission dip, he said. So it also caused some flight cancellations and delays, but all power and services were restored before midnight, McGee had said. And New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio said a message on Twitter that Con Ed was evaluating the extent of power outages in the area. He said that travelers could expect delays through early Friday, and the case of the incident was being investigated. So that's the story there. I want to quickly just look to see if there's anything else here that we should speak to you about, but I think that we're really okay. Bear with me one more second. I want to just make sure if we've covered everything that we can. I think that's basically it. I think we're fine here. So I want to just thank you for being with us today. I want to thank you for being with us all year. And I hope you'll consider continuing your patronage of the website and Westchester on the Level. For 2019, we wish you and your family good health and good spirits. And may it be as promising as one would hope, because the new year is a promise. And I guess we all have to do the best that we can to accommodate the 2019 promise in the hope that it will be better for us, all told. So that's the story here. I want to thank you again for being with us and hope to speak to you tomorrow. And I just want to quickly look, if I remember correctly, tomorrow we're going to speak to Yonkers Insider, a publisher and editor, and Delphi Musler, and that's going to be a lot of fun, and we'll talk about a lot of things. So just join us then, and enjoy tonight. It's going to be a rainy New Year's Eve, but even the rain can't cause us to feel, I guess, burdened by the weather. I think it'll still be a lot of fun, and I wish you and your family, all of you and your family and your friends and colleagues and associates, a happy and healthy new year. So all the best, folks, and we'll speak to you tomorrow when we have an opportunity to share our thoughts with Delphi Musler. Goodbye.